Prepare yourself for invasion. This is Indie Invasion.
Hey guys, what's happening? Welcome to another interview with Indie Invasion. As usual, I am joined by the irrepressible and indomitable Eric, who is checking his hair currently.
I feel weird. I don't have my hat on.
Well, as you can see, myself and my guest do not require hair checking. But today we have with us actually the creator, writer, mastermind, and all those other things of a new game called Planet Bound. The name of the company is Successor Games. And as we go through this whole interview, be prepared for nepotism and bias, because Jeremy Jack of Successor Games is in fact my cousin. And so that's not the reason we have him on. We have him on because he is an independent game developer. So Eric, say hello.
Hello.
Jer, say hello, please, to our listeners.
Hello. What's up, fellas?
All right. And I'm super excited because, Eric, this is something a little bit different for us. We have, since we started doing Indie Invasion, we've really only been focusing on miniature-based games. But when Eric and I had first talked about creating Indie Invasion, the purpose behind it was independent game developers. Because for a couple of reasons, if you followed any of our podcasts or listen to anything, you'll be familiar with a couple of these things I'm about to say. And that's that we have found in our experience that when you're dealing with the independent game developer, you get almost immediate feedback from them. You feel like you're a part of the creative process because it's a smaller company. It's not to fault the big guys. A lot of them do great jobs, but the reality is once a company gets so big, once an anything gets so big, becomes a little bit impersonal. So today, we're talking about an RPG as opposed to a skirmish game. And I'm excited about this. We talked a little bit about last night as we were priming the wheels of this machine that Eric and I are clinging to desperately as it careens out of control. But Eric, why don't you start us out with some questions, man?
All right. We always like to start with pretty simple question to kind of get to know our guest, and we want to know, how'd you get started in the world of gaming? What was that catalyst for you?
Well, he's sitting right over in one of these little squares that you're seeing on your video. His haircut looks a little bit like mine.
Yeah, a little bit. I got a little bit more sun on mine though.
Yeah, Mac was a big part of my development, or my intro to role playing. It very first started at the age of 12 with a older friend of mine. So my sister's best friend, who we call Sis, she's like my sister, her brother played Dungeons and Dragons his whole life. And by the time I was 12, he's like, oh, Jeremy, you have such an imagination. I drew like crazy at that time. We'll get into the illustration portion of the game later, but I was drawing like crazy. He said, your imagination is so perfect for this thing called Dungeons and Dragons, this thing called role-playing games. And I'm like, oh, what is this? And he shows me how to make a character, and my whole brain exploded. I was like, what? I can make up my own person that I – and I'm thinking of every single movie, sci-fi and fantasy-wise, that I was in love with. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I get to do my own thing now. I get to tell my own story through my own character. So I created my first character. I played for the first time. I died the first game. Because I had no idea what I'm doing, right? And it was awesome, though. I learned something huge from that, too, because as we continued to play that campaign, I, of course, had to make another character. And the group that we were playing with, we come up against an antagonist, and the villagers are trying to get away from this guy, and he's this horrible, you know, demon, and he's slaying all the townsfolk, and we come up against him. He turns out to be my undead player character, the one who died the first game. All right, so it's like a great twist for the game.
So important question, because I remember this, is what was the name of that first character? Do you remember?
Yes, I do. So my first character's name was Andrak, not in your campaign. My first character's name was Andrak, based on a Dennis McKiernan book. He was a half mage, half elf mage. My first game with Billy, I do know, because there's a homage to her in my game. My first game with Billy was a character named Anja. Bald chick with two braids.
Yeah.
The main character in the game Planet Bound, we'll talk about how the game is formatted, but it's formatted through two protagonists. One of them's name is Kyren. Her mother is Anja,
okay,
from the original character. You'll read about it as you
continue. I actually have in one of my sketchbooks a drawing that Jeremy did, and it is of that character. And we're talking an old sketchbook, like the pages are kind of yellow and tattered around the edges. You wouldn't even have to change it if you wanted to use it in an RPG to give it
the feel.
It's just perfect, just like it is. It's weathered and all that good fun stuff. So what about you, Eric? Do you remember your first RPG character's name? Yeah.
No, because I dabbled in so many back in the 80s.
Okay, that's fair.
That I think a lot of the fun, I don't know if I really spent a lot of time with the names or the backstories. I just wanted to create the characters, and come up with their stats and stuff like that. And I might have a folder somewhere with some of them.
That's awesome. People that have those original folders, I give props to. My home burned down at one point, and I lost a lot of that. But
oh, man.
That stuff is so awesome to rife through. I'm so glad Billy has so much of it. Another cousin of mine does. But my second introduction, so John and then Mac, Billy. I call him Billy. He's my cousin. I call him Billy. Y'all know him as Mac. So if I say Billy, that's who I'm talking about.
It's me. William Billy.
William.
There you go.
Yeah, so Mac and I, he was my second introduction. He played, he combined all kinds of things. He was using Palladium rules at the time. I didn't know it because I didn't know anything about the rule system. So I just thought we were playing more Dungeons & Dragons, and I had a blast. He taught me so much about creating the setting as a GM, meaning creating the environment, feeling like you're in the environment, the description of the environment, all the way to playing in character, meaning the role-playing aspect. Billy's the one that taught me that.
I
fell in love. It combined my imagination with play acting, with drawing. I mean, it was everything that I loved.
Right. Okay, so when you were starting out there, so you touched on D&D and Palladium. Obviously, Planetbound wasn't too far behind that.
Nope.
But what, at that time in your life, what was your favorite game that wasn't Planetbound that you were playing?
Oh, it had to be Rifts.
Oh, wow. Boy, that one rings an old bell, too.
Yeah, Rift. It had to be Rift. Palladium was doing such cool things. And I enjoyed their fantasy role-playing, their general fantasy role-playing. Yeah. It was pretty good, too. But Rifts is where the magic for me came in. They did especially the initial stuff.
Yes, that was the best.
And I won't say more than that because I'm not. I don't want to. Palladium Books is awesome. There's homage to the name Palladium within Planetbound. It's such a great format, great things that they created, including their, they did a series of books that were just like one-offs. What are they called? The Rifter. Those were really good. Rifter Magazine. Those were really good. I thought that was a great way of presenting a lot of additional material, but Rifts, just the original book was fantastic.
Yep. That original book was, the whole concept, it was novel. It was brand new. Yep. Everything about it was cool. The system was, I mean, I've always been a fan of the Palladium rule set anyway.
Yeah.
But it was so good. It bloated like a lot of games do, because when you can sell a book, you just keep pumping them out. All of a sudden, everything in the first book became obsolete. And if you were something from the first book, you were dead.
Yeah.
Period. There was nothing you could do about it. But yeah, me too. I loved the first, the first Rifts book. Loved it.
Okay, so Jeremy, you're talking about some of these old games that you were introduced to. Are these kind of what inspired you to create your game setting? I mean, what really inspired you to create your setting for your game that you came up with?
So the inspiration for Planetbound, of course, Dungeons & Dragons, Rifts, other games, Shadowrun, there was games out there that really played into anything that inspired me played into Planetbound, anything that inspired me. But before that, the things that were inspiring me were the, Disney's of the world, the Don Bluth's of the world, the Jim Henson's of the world, the Gene Roddenberry's of the world, the George Lucas's of the world. Tolkien, these world builders are what I was so fascinated with. Even before I even looked at role-playing or started role-playing, I had been reading all this stuff, watching all of this stuff, and was totally enamored by world building before I even knew what that word meant. Mm-hmm. I was just enamored by it. So that's more probably of the inspiration of Planetbound than anything, is building a world. But the story of how Planetbound got started is because my parents didn't want me. My parents were pretty religious in my upbringing, so they didn't want me to play Dungeons & Dragons. It was a big no-no. Mac will remember that. As he was trying to teach us how to game and play with us, my parents were going, don't you bring all that right. stuff in our house.
Yeah, we all know you, Mac, how hey, you are.
Hey, I was a young guy in the Air Force station right. out there. I had just gotten there. I didn't know anybody. I'm like, hey, I got family right up the road. I can set them into a game. And I know, and I was like, Jared'd be a sucker for this because he likes to draw and all of those things that when you walk into, say, a convention or something, you can go, oh yeah, well, I have so much in common with all these people because we do. We like the stories. We like drawing, even if we can't. We like painting, even if we can't. You know, all of those things resonate with all of us. That's why people listen to our podcast. It's why we want to talk to people. You know, so that stuff resonates, so we get it. So I knew he would be a sucker. I mean, I mean, not a sucker. He would be
I was a total sucker. What do you mean?
He would be receptive.
So what we would do, me and my buddies, because I wanted to play so badly. My parents weren't okay with violence and magic, but for some reason, science fiction was okay. Things like Star Wars and Star Trek, those things, which I also love. Science fiction is a huge love of mine. That's probably why I was so into Risk, because it combined a lot of fantasy and science fiction elements. And that's what I ended up doing with Planetbound. So I took my buddies to, because they still, when they saw dice, my parents were like, are you doing that thing? So I take my polyhedral dice, I'd run up to the school across the street, and I would play combinations of sci-fi stuff with my friends, because that was permissible by my parents. And it was me and three of my buddies, so the four of us would play. How Planetbound got started, though, was because me as a 14-year-old, I was 14 when I created it, my 14-year-old mind could not wrap my head around any mechanics for space travel, and I was getting frustrated with going from planet to planet, and ship battles were difficult. It was just out of my element at the time, and it didn't feel like fantasy. And I loved the feeling that Mac would create for me in a fantasy setting, adventuring across a landscape feeling. And I couldn't get that with science fiction. Right. So I was like, how do I get that feeling? Well, what if I can get them on a planet and we just stay on that planet? Okay, what could trap them on a planet? So the whole concept of sun death that would bring everybody to one planet and then would trap them on a planet was all derived because my parents wouldn't let me play some magic game. And me and my buddies could play sci-fi. So I wanted sci-fi elements with a fantasy feel to it. So therefore, Planetbound was created.
Well, there you go. I want to say something about that too. Respected his parents' wishes and didn't play the magic stuff. How about that, right?
That's right. Go,
okay, if I can, I'll make my own game.
That's right.
That's what all of us want to do as creators, because we've mentioned several times, Jared, when Eric and I do interviews with people, is that we love that people create their games, because I don't think that there's a gamer, whether it's an RPG guy, the historical miniatures war gamers or skirmish war gamers or big war gamers, that wouldn't love to create their own game. However, it's a good thing most of us don't, because most of us wouldn't really create anything that good of a quality. So it's really exciting when we get the opportunity to connect with people and go, hey, we're doing this. And it's like, oh, okay, that's cool. I couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
So we can get behind it. So I really like what we love about the indie market is that it allows us and the people that listen to us to get behind
them
that are doing it, as we go, we are the rah-rah section in the back because we go, rah-rah, I don't know how to do any of that. So I'm just going to rah-rah for you. And that's okay. So
it is.
Great. But now the next question is going to set up, and I think this one's kind of really where everybody's going to kind of lean in and listen a little bit. I want you to tell us some about specifically the setting for Planetbound. We're off the simple questions now. The hard
we'll get
ones.
Into the meat of it.
The meat is coming, and then we have the hard ones, our favorite hard ones. They've been pretty hard, haven't they? Everyone scratches their head. We have hard questions. I hope you studied.
Well, I haven't, and I'm game for hard questions, though. Okay. Well,
tell us about the setting, then. Okay. Tell us why we need to play in this setting.
So the premise for the game, what makes the game so exciting, I think there's two aspects that make the game so exciting. Number one, the premise of the game, the whole concept of the game. And number two, how the game is played, of course. But the premise for the game is that at some point in time in whatever region of space that we're talking about, the game calls the cosmos, that a group of people called the Lodestar, these people are connected to the energy source of the cosmos. They sense through that energy source that they call Nova that something is amiss, meaning the suns across planetary systems all across the cosmos are all of a sudden dying all at once. Not every sun, but suns across planetary systems in the cosmos, meaning life as they know it. All of a sudden, all these suns are dying and they're going to go supernova in 10 years period of time. This group informs the nations and factions and species of the cosmos, hey, this is going to happen. They get together their top scientists. They confirm that this is going to happen. So then all of a sudden, the peoples of the universe unite because there's this cause to save life as they know it. Yeah, we gotta save life as we know it. So they all get together their greatest scientific minds, where the Lodestar then look through Nova. They get the help of this group called the Seekers, who's really charted the cosmos quite a bit. And they find through that energy force in the cosmos, they find a planet that they say is going to survive. Then the scientists confirm, yes, this planet, there's planets that possibly will survive, but this planet, under every calculation that they can decipher, this planet for sure is going to survive this cataclysm. So yay, we found the planet, we found the savior, we found the sanctuary. Oh wait, there's just one planet for the entire cosmos. So immediately this escalates to war and war for almost 10 years, because it's been a while since they discovered sun death, but war for almost 10 years that culminates around the planet in the end, called the sun death wars. So they call the phenomenon that the suns are going to die, they call the phenomenon sun death. The resulting wars end up being called the sun death wars. Then the cataclysm is going to happen. So everybody makes for the planet, because at this point, they're just in dire wanting to save their lives. They all make for the planet. They all hunker down because sun death is about to happen. Sun death happens. The planet, although it survives, yes, is not immune to the effects of sun death. So right. The gravitational shifts across the cosmos cause planetary disasters across the landscape. The planet is massive. We'll talk more about the planet later, but the planet is massive. So the game takes place in one section of the planet because it seemed to be the most inhabitable. There was a lot of reasons they couldn't do topographical analysis, but they go to that part of the planet. Everybody hunkers down. Sun death happens. Planetary disasters ensue. There's apocalypse upon apocalypse upon apocalypse. I call it the post-apocalyptic upon apocalypse. It all takes a year's period of time, what they call a season year on the planet, because there's four season years on the planet because there's a large rotation around its sun. Regardless, after the planetary disasters are finished, we've lost millions of more lives in the planetary disasters. Millions of lives were lost in the sun death wars. Now we're all there. Okay, let's find out what survived. Let's leave the planet, see what's out there. They go to leave the planet and they realize they can't. As they go through the atmosphere, their ships are destroyed instantly. They find a particle energy field now surrounding this planet. Whatever the cause was, they don't have a reason for the cause.
I know the cause.
You know the cause?
I didn't want him to get off the planet.
I didn't want to do this. I had him trapped there. That's the cause. The cause is that GM called Jeremy Jackson, who wanted to play a fantasy feel with his sci-fi game.
That's right. That's
accurate. Right. And there, and you know, that's part of the mystery of the game, is what was the reason trapped now on this planet. So now when they realize they're all trapped here, oh my gosh, the planet is the place where I need to vie for power. It begins warfare again. There's 40 years of war. Finally, they realize they're going to eradicate life as they know it, so they stop the warfare in the signing of a treaty, a ceasefire treaty called the Homeworld Accords. Homeworld is the name of the planet that they found. They deem it Homeworld. Obviously, it becomes everybody's home. And it's been 7 years since then, where all the nations' factions are slowly rebuilding themselves. So you're playing in this setting of relative peace and adventuring across the landscape of this incredible world full of all kinds of landscapes, all kinds of diverse species, all kinds of nations, factions. Everybody's got their own agenda. So you get to play whoever is agenda you want to relate to, or even if you're playing for one of those species, nations, or factions, you can have your own agenda. It's role-playing. So you get to build the character that you want and traverse the landscape in the way that you want.
Right. Well, one of the things that I like that you had said about the game is that you focused on a small portion of the planet.
Yeah.
And the thing that I like about that is, just like you said earlier, world building.
Yeah.
By doing that, you've just given all the people that are interested in the game the opportunity to build on that world.
Yes.
And I think that is brilliant. I've seen, there's been a couple of games that I have seen do that, not in the RPG department so much, but to be fair, I haven't been in the RPG world a whole lot lately. Eric's trying to suck me back into White
Wolf. As you should, Eric, as you should.
But just as an example, The Drowned Earth is one of them. In fact, very much does the same thing. There's just this little small part of the world that is there, and the rest of it, you just do your own thing. Twisted is the other one. It pretty much takes place in London, Victorian steampunk, but everything else, the world is your oyster kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that is such a good way to set up a game, because not only does it allow people to do the world building, but then they become invested in the product. They feel like they're a part of the process of creating, and people do buy in when they're part of it. That's how it works. That's what they do. So that sounds like an amazing setting, but I'm going to say, I think you left something out that I want you to tell us, and that's the ruins. Can you tell us a little bit about those ruins?
Oh, yes. Yeah, very good. Because so this is an important aspect. So there's the mystery and intrigue of the thing, the stuff that you're trying to figure out in the game is multi. So how did we get here? What makes this world so special in the first place? How did we get trapped here? Is there any way off of it? But then once they're there and everything settles down, they start to discover dotted across the landscape ancient ruins. And I mean very, very ancient ruins, millennia old. How well preserved, I mean, they're so well preserved. It's a mystery how well they're preserved. Somebody was here before. Who was here before? Where did they go? What was here before? Why would people have come here before? Why did they leave here before? What is so special about this place called Homeworld? Were there original species that inhabited the planet? And where did they go? It leaves all kinds of questions to be answered within the game.
Yeah, within the story. Awesome.
Yeah, within the story.
Yeah, and that's a great part of role-playing game is that mystery.
Yes.
You know, for the narrative aspect is, you know, as a player going into this, you get to create, like we said, you know, expand on this world and create a story with just these little tidbits, you know, and decide where it goes. So that's exciting.
Yeah, the book is full. I designed it specifically that way. I call them, I drop red slippers. I stole the term from one of my favorite writers, Dennis McKiernan, in his book, Dragon Doom. He talks about it at the beginning of the book, his foreword of the book. He talks about, you know, the writers of Holmes and how they would say things like, you know, if it's written from Watson's perspective, and Watson will say things like, after the case of the soul red slipper was solved, then we got a knock at the door and we weren't sure if we were getting something was happening with that case, and then we opened the door but it ended up being this thing, and it sets them off on this whole other adventure. But there was this mystery solved called the red slipper that we knew nothing, it's just talked about, but hold on, what was that whole story? What was the backstory of the red slipper? So Planet Bound is full of red slippers like that, and that's particular to allow GMs to go, oh man, I could do, and they're literally sentences here and there throughout the entire trilogy of first books that a GM can go, wow, just in that one sentence I can build an entire campaign and expand on some little aspect of that.
So Jeremy, what you got in store for the game? We wanted to bring you on. I know you got some things coming up pretty soon that will be ramping you up soon.
So the whole writing portion of the game is complete. The illustrations are about halfway complete. The mechanics are about 80% complete. So we're coming up on release of the game. So what's to know upcoming is that the Kickstarter for the game will launch in September. September is my birthday month. It's my favorite month of the year.
Good time.
Are you a fellow? Are you another Virgo?
No, I'm a February guy.
Oh, you're a February. Oh, you're an Aquarian. Oh,
maybe launch something like that.
So anyway, so September is the launch of the Kickstarter campaign. That'll run through the end of September. There's some awesome stretch goals. We can talk about those when we talk about those. And then the game will go completely out for regular sales October 1st. And what's to know is that pre-sales are happening right now. Pre-sales are only going on until July 15th. So this Wednesday, pre-sales are over. So if you're looking to get your pre-sale copy, get it in now at successorgames.com.
Just a couple more days.
I
just got mine in today.
Well, I may have had inside information about that happening, so I ordered mine pretty much right away. But we will, for those of you guys listening, we will throw a link up in the description of the video to Successor Games, so you can do that pre-order. And what we'll also try to do is in September, Jer, if you're good for coming back, we'll do a spoof-up video for the Kickstarter and support that as best we can as well. If let's see, when are the pre-order books supposed to ship?
They'll ship at the end of the Kickstarter, so everything will all ship together.
Okay, so I may have my pre-order for Mace Convention in November, and I'll take that up there with me and show it off. There's a lot of RPG guys that go to that convention.
What's great about the pre-sale copy, so that you know this is why they're one-of-a-kind games. They're not going to be resold again, so we're not going to sell these aspects of the game. So it'll be the actual book itself, and it will be signed. It will be numbered. All the pre-sales will be numbered, and it'll have a hand-drawn sketch. So I'm the illustrator of the game as well. I happen to be an artist. So I happen to be the full RPG package. I'm a writer, I'm an artist, and a creator, meaning.
And he's bald, so he's got that going.
And he's bald. So yeah, so as the illustrator of the game, I will do hand-drawn sketches on the inside cover of something Planet Bound related for each of those pre-sale games. Nice. So I had to cut it off. I was going to run it all the way to the Kickstarter, but that started to get to be too many books to draw in, and I want to be able to get those out to people ASAP. So I wanted to, we'll just go ahead and cut it off here.
You still got 3 days. There's no telling how many you might get after this. So I mean, we're not huge, but you never know. You never know. Somebody might share it in the right place and might have another 50. But so next question is this. Now this one's loaded.
Okay.
So this is going to be the first part of the question, not hard. It's going to be the second part. Okay. I know that there's multiple factions / races in the game. Can you give us kind of a rundown on what it is that you're going to be – what are we going to be playing? What are we going to have available to use? Who are they?
Yeah. So what I'll tell you is the format of the game. So the game is a trilogy. That's the first book is the one that's coming out here in September. Then there's a second and third book that will be coming out probably within 3 months. That's the goal. That's the schedule for them, 3 months apart. And so what's to know is that in the total, the couple things to know is that the three books make up the core game, everything that you need for playing the game. And the three books are not interdependent on each other. So I can own one of the books and I can still play the entire game. I'm just playing in that aspect of the game in the trilogy. So the trilogy is actually, remember I talked about that one part of the planet? Right. That one part of the planet consists of three major continents. So each of the books is one of those three continents.
Okay.
So the first book you're playing on the Eastern continent, that's where the game begins. So the three races that you can play on that part in this portion of the game are humans, a species called the Baquet, and then a species called the Gorak. There are five other playable species that are in the other two books. So there's two more that are in the second book and three more after that that are in the third book. So a total of 8 playable species for the game.
All right. Can you give us a rundown on – I'm pretty sure no one's going to need an explanation on what a human character is.
No.
I may be wrong. I don't know. I don't know who's listening. But what about the other two? So we won't because we'll save the other ones for when the other ones come out, and we'll talk to you again.
Okay. Yeah.
What are those other two? Break them down for us. I'd like to know what.
Of course. I'll break down the humans for you too, because the spin on the humans is that they come from a planet called Genesis, so they refer to themselves as the children of Genesis, and so they went through
Star Trek there. A little Star Trek.
Yeah. Beautiful reference to Trek, right? Genesis planet and Spock's rebirth. There's this story of kind of rebirth of themselves, meaning they went from a time period of, you know, warfare on their planet all the way to enlightenment. And then they go through this stage of interstellar travel and expansion. But then in their expansion, they get a little twisted in their way. And then sun death happens and it makes them very, very suspicious of everybody, especially they become highly suspicious of the Lodestar and anybody who is Nova born. So remember that energy source in the cosmos,
right.
Anybody that can use that is called Nova born, and the humans particularly become very, very suspicious, and propaganda about them goes out because they believe that they are the cause not only of Sundeath, ultimately they were the ones that found it, remember?
I like that.
And that they were the ones responsible for the particle energy field that is trapping. They were the ones that originally found Homeworld, and they're the ones that what they did to protect themselves was caused a beacon of light that could be seen for hundreds of miles,
right,
and that through the entire planetary disasters, and none of their little city got hurt.
Right.
So obviously these guys are behind it all. So this, the humans become very suspicious of other species. And so they become human supremacists in a way that's not entirely accurate, because it's not like they don't have other species in their territory. However, they do believe that they know better and are the ones to run the show on Homeworld. And they have this, the way that they control the people is through their war machine against the Novaborn and against the Lodestar.
Okay.
So that's the human beings. Their empire, their nation is called the Human Unified Regency. So it's certainly a royalistic. The Prince Regent is the president of the nation, and so it definitely has that kingship feel to it, where it's more of a hierarchy, and we're going to tell you what to do.
A little bit of monarchy action going on there.
Monarchy, that's the word I was looking for.
Then. I thought it was.
So that's the humans. The Baquette, which is a smaller portion of that continent, it's up in the north portion of the continent. The Baquette are the smallest species. So they're the little guys. They're the hobbits of Homeworld, I call them. And they're the fun-loving race that everybody, you know, they're the halflings. They're the flippant, crass, in-your-face, over-the-top race that are just super fun to play. And their species is so unique because, number one, they're super tech-savvy. They're the ones that very first find some of the ruins. So of the classes that you can play amongst, you can play any of the species with these classes. But this class that is particular to the Baquette, meaning many of the Baquette are this class, is called Seekers. And the Seekers are always looking for what they can. They're treasure hunters, essentially.
Right.
But they're traversing the landscape looking for all of the secrets of Homeworld to uncover, right? And so they find one of the ruins upon Homeworld, and they call it Remnant because it's a remnant of whatever was, you know, came before. So they named the place Remnant. They actually occupy the city until Sundeath happens. Sundeath causes it to sinkhole in because of tidal waves that come. They find that Remnant is actually multi-leveled underground for who knows how many levels. It's impossible to explore because it's, you know, hundreds of miles across and then hundreds of miles deep. This planet is pretty expansive. So great for dungeon crawling. It's an awesome place.
Get your graph paper out, boys.
That's right. It's super. Yeah, graph paper. Go have a blast. Create.
I might be a little old school, you know. Pack of graph paper. In my
That's right. So anyway, so the Baquette find amongst those ruins a lot of information, including a lot of maps to a lot of places in Homeworld, and a lot of schematics for technology, ancient technology that used to exist. And so using whatever technology they had left before Sundeath and these schematics and whatever is on the planet, they build an entire floating city that's uses these anti-grav units in order to keep it floated above Remnant. So now that Remnant is a sinkhole down,
right,
they have a, within their government, which is called the Baquette Ministry, they have a Department of Antiquities, which has control over Remnant and decides when people can. It's super dangerous to go in there, and they don't want it to get ruined because there's so much that can happen in there. So there's limited weaponry that you can go. So if you're going in there, you're really going on some sort of adventure. But the floating city above it is called Haven, and Haven is this just metropolis of pleasure, meaning it's a place where people can go and have a lot of fun. A lot of adventures can happen there too. But a place called the Commons there is where people go to have fun. That's the place where you begin the game of, so you're all sitting around in a tavern on Haven.
Right. There's where the tavern is.
That's where it is. That's where their people go. And the Baquette, they're just this crass, fun loving race. You get to play Seekers from them. There's a mob boss that works on Haven. His name is Jono. He makes like he's not so smart in the head, but he's a really wise guy and has a lot of control over things that happen on Haven. And So there's a lot of underground that happens on Haven 2 that you can play, a lot of what they call the dark market that gets played. But he has a group called the Crimson Cavalier, which is essentially his mercenary army. So you can play one of the Crimson Cavalier. So it's a lot, it's a fun place on the planet to play. I would describe the Backhead as just the fun species to play if you want to just have a blast.
Right.
The third species you can play
I'll just jump in real quick. Sure. For those of you that are curious about what they look like, if you go on Jeremy's Instagram, he regularly, and it's the Planet Bound Instagram. You can see Are You Planet Bound Instagram. You can see a lot of the sketches also. And again, we'll throw a link up for the Instagram in the description. We'll also throw a link up for his YouTube channel, Are You Planet Bound, where he is walking through doing 5, 6, 10 minute videos on what the whole world is about and what's going on in it. So check those out too. But anyway, press on. I didn't want to forget.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Social media wise, Are You Planet Bound is everything. So it's Facebook. It's Twitter is the only difference. It's R, like the letter R, U, like the letter U, and then Planet Bound, because A-R-E-Y-O-U for some reason didn't work on Twitter. I'm not sure. And maybe it was too many characters. But you can, everything is R-U-A-R-E-Y-O-U, Planet Bound, for everything else. And yes, so the third species that you can play are the Gwarak, G-W-A-R-R-A-K. And the Gwarak are, they are my favorite. I know a creator shouldn't have favorites, but they are one of, if not my favorite species of all the eight species that you can play. The thing about the Gwarak are they are, I guess you could best describe them as, they're difficult to describe because there's a dichotomy with them that is very interesting. So they're naturalists. They're very in tune with nature. They're very in tune with wildlife. They have what they call langra. They're these small tentacles that get larger as they get older. They go across the back of their heads, but then spread out and they get hardened as they grow older. But it allows them latent empathic ability, specifically with nature. So they can commune with nature through these things and wildlife. So they're very, very have a connection to nature. And on the other side of them, there's this very powerful and passionate and in your face species. They're not, so you think of a species that typically is done in a lot of role-playing games that are very communal with nature, are usually very peaceful.
Right.
This species is not necessarily, no, in fact, they're not very peaceful at all, especially considering their history. There's been a lot of warfare in it, and especially on Homeworld. They're the ones that have been rife with civil warfare within their own species, especially during the 40 Years' War and then leading up to conflict with the humans later. But they had conflict with the humans before Sundeath. But what you can play within them, which is just awesome, is that at this point they've become a full-fledged Gwarak nation. So it's almost like, I guess you could describe it maybe even as native, like Native Americans, native to any other country, where right. They're just so in tune with nature. They're so in tune with the place that they live, and they're a fully united nation. They work together as one now. They don't have a leader, so there's no one person in charge. They work as a group to whatever they're trying to accomplish. So you can, there's what you can play with them is called the Jod Gwarak. The Jod means rider, so the beast riders. So there's these creatures that they ride specifically when they go into battle. There's three of them, so you can be a rider of one of each of the three species. One of them is a big hulking monster of a species that they ride. One of them is a flying creature that they ride. And then one of them is a swift, fast creature that can dart in and out that they ride. So they're the uniqueness about them is that they're this open-minded, non-judgmental race, but very, very powerful, very passionate, and very connected to their surroundings and as a people. They're a really cool race. Got a great history.
Well, I can't wait to find out about the other ones too, but you did ruin my hard question.
Oh no.
My hard question was, who's your favorite faction?
Oh, so that's a tough one because I do love them all. The Backhead wasn't one of my favorites too, because for other reasons, I just love their fun, loving spirit. When you read about them and their history and their mentality around stuff, it's just, you can imagine playing them. And at me as the GM, when I'm playing with them, I use a lot of, playing in character is a big deal to me.
Oh yeah.
And role playing is a big deal to me. So when I'm playing as the GM and I'm embodying the world and I'm embodying the Backhead players, the Backhead characters, it's just so fun.
Yeah.
They're just fun. Well, so yes, definitely. Of the other species, there's a few more that are pretty amazing that I love too.
Well, when you mentioned the Baquette, the first thing that popped into my mind was the Kinder from Dragonlance.
Yes, there's a great, yes.
That's the first thing that popped into my mind.
They are the little, I designed them to be the little people of the world. The Warrows, right. The Hobbits, the Kinder, the Halflings. That's the Baquette.
Yeah, you gotta have one of the little ones.
Yeah, exactly. And they always end up being the great heroes of the world,
yeah,
right?
Of course, they have to be.
They do incredible things, these little guys.
My gnome ranger saved the world.
That's right.
All right, I have
gully dwarf saved the world.
Gully dwarf saved the world.
So I got a question for you. So besides playing your own game, because I'm sure you're busy playtesting and getting things balanced and stuff. What games do you play currently? Are there other games that you like to play to, like, maybe relax and kind of shut your brain off from your own project?
So, yes, I do enjoy that. I will say, because we're about a month and a half off now from the Kickstarter, that there isn't really a whole lot of time for that. And some of the things, I have two sons, and they're teenagers now. And so what I've been doing is I vicariously enjoy them playing games, especially video games, and they get really into similar to their father, they get into really strong story games, so they play a lot of turn-based RPG type games, and otherwise that I just get to enjoy the adventure through them. I get to enjoy like what people are creating these days. I've been personally playing, oddly, I know I mentioned Disney as one of my big inspirations for art and as a creator. I've been playing Kingdom Hearts again lately, meaning I haven't played 3 yet. I've played 1 and 2 and the ones in between, but I've been playing the whole saga again. They released the full saga on PlayStation, I don't know,
14
years ago now, when
the third one came out.
So I don't know. That's a great, because I'm a huge fan of Final Fantasy too. And then that was a great marrying of Final Fantasy. It's almost like marrying sci-fi and fantasy, as in like Planet Bound. That, right. I love when things get married that way. This total fantasy aspect of gaming or video games, Final Fantasy, turn-based RPGs with Disney and every world within Disney, and kind of making it one and the same. I had a blast in it. But yes, I especially video games, and when it comes to other types of entertainment, there's just some great shows out there that I've entertained myself with to get inspiration from, things to read are super inspiring for sure.
Awesome. All right. So, as we come towards the end here, give us your elevator pitch for why people should play Planet Bound.
So for me, if you're a gamer like I am, and you've gotten like fed up with heavy rule-based games where you just feel like the rules are so dense that you no longer are able to have fun in your game. So I think the number one reason we should game is to have fun. So I don't think that there should be no rules to gaming. However, if the rules are disrupting your ability to have fun, if the rules are interrupting the things about gaming that are fun to me, which are the epic storytelling part of gaming and the role-playing part of gaming, then you got to have rules that drive those things instead. And so that's big part of the reason that I created Planet Bound in the first place, because I would be going on these wonderful adventures and these stories, and then we would get to a battle or something like that, and we'd come to a screeching halt.
Right.
Yeah.
And now we got to get out. Now we got to roll for it. And now we got to. And now we got to. And now we got to. And the mechanics portion of the game totally interrupted the whole being immersed in the game. And so I call it immersive role playing, so that the mechanics are set up in a way, this game is designed to drive the parts of role playing that I think are the funnest, which are epic storytelling and playing in character. So the mechanics are there, but they are made to help you keep telling great epic stories and get into the role playing aspect of things. So if you love those aspects of gaming, then this game is for you. If you love epic storytelling, and if you love science fiction, you love fantasy, and you love when they get married, if you're a big fan of things like Star Wars, Star Trek, and otherwise, this is the game for you.
Well, that's the elevator pitch right there. I will say this too, because you mentioned the whole role-playing part of it, and I remember when I first discovered first edition Palladium Fantasy, the rule book was set up horribly. I mean, as far as finding stuff, it was set up horribly, but when you looked in the guidelines for experience points, the very first thing for earning experience points in that game was playing in character.
Yep.
That was the very first thing, and that was the most consistent way in that game that you could earn experience in order to level up your character. And that resonated with me in every other storytelling game that I became a part of, to the point where I no longer ever even referred to myself as a GM. In fact, it was White Wolf that changed the title for me, because in the White Wolf vampire games, they don't call him a GM. It's a storyteller.
Yeah.
And it's so apropos. It's so...
It is so apropos.
Spot on. It is what it needs to be. You got to be a storyteller. Yeah. So,
speaking of, you got to check out next week's Unbound. This week's Unbound is starting to talk about the mechanics. Next week, we're going to talk about the leveling up process.
Okay.
Which, wait for it, no experience points.
Oh.
Level up process. Wait for it.
I'm interested. I'm going to have
to. Yeah. Give me a little intrigue.
I might have to actually be all the way awake, not laying in bed looking at my.
Wait, what is this? No experience.
Now I might have to take notes on that one. So we've already said, and we're going to throw up the links. We have one other question that Eric was going to ask, but you want to throw that one out there? I don't know if there's really.
We can ask you if you have anything on your hobby desk. Do you do any other kind of hobbies? What's on your hobby desk?
Oh, hobby desk. Gosh. Of course, art and more art. So yeah, because I'm the artist for the game, I do draw just for me sometimes too. And so, you know, being an artist illustrator, I mean, that's why I'm wearing Maurice Sendak, you know, Where the Wild. And he was an artist illustrator, a brilliant one. And being an artist illustrator is definitely its own animal, because it's just how I have fun. It's how I play in my mind. It is my hobby, is to draw and create from whatever I'm drawing. And if the hobby, so when I want to relax and draw, I draw things that I love. So I'm a child of the 80s. Every fantasy, every sci-fi, everything that we played toys with in the 80s, from He-Man to My Little Pony, I'll draw, you know, fan art for, because it's what I grew up with, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and otherwise. That's the type of stuff I'll draw fan art of, just to kind of relax and take my mind off of anything. But yeah, that's definitely a hobby of mine. I do some collecting. I'm a big fan of entertainment as far as media is concerned. So if there's good media out there, if there's a good show on Netflix, if there's a good show on Hulu, then yeah, I don't mind. I'm up for binging it. Fitness is another hobby of mine. Keeping myself healthy, getting my boys involved in fitness. Oh, I just said it. My boys are definitely my hobby.
Anybody that's kind of a big hobby for them.
Yeah, that's a fun one. Being a dad is I can't say enough about it.
I'm gonna throw this out there just because I'm selfish and I can. I have some authentic early 90s Jeremy M. Jack artwork. So for all of you people out there listening and deciding that you want to check out his artwork, all I have to say to you is, because I have some, because he's my cousin. So like I said, this show is going to be filled with nepotism.
There's people that have some, you know, I mentioned my home burning down. This is a crazy thing. The guy who the community of gamers that play Planet Bound, we call ourselves the Fellas. And that comes from a group in Southern California that was associated with my cousin Travis. So the Fellas at one point had started asking me for a commercial version of Planet Bound. They wanted it put out there. And I kept saying, no, this is just for us. This is for the Fellas, which I had my own garbage going on in my own head about that. Once I got past my own garbage, my cousin Travis in 2010 said, hey, let's make a commercial version. That didn't end up panning out. It was too much of a deviation from the original game. Then one of the players of the game came and said, hey, let's make the commercial version. Well, before he came to me and we started working on the commercial version, this player, he was the game's biggest fan. He grew up, he was little when he started playing. He was 15. We were a lot older than him, about 10 years. And it was his inroad to play with the big guys, with the Fellas, was to know a whole lot about this game. He loved the game so much. When our home burned down, everything Planet Bound was in there. It was in the closet. So home burned down. The firefighters were there. They're hosing the place down. They get it to where the fire's out. This guy, he goes up to the firefighters. He goes, there's something in there so valuable. You need to let me in. And I'm watching. I'm still disoriented. My home just burned down. You know, everything that's going on. They're like, okay, man. You know, he's acting like crazy, like that this is the most important thing. He gets in there. He comes out with the burnt up box of Planet Bound, everything Planet Bound from the 90s to now. I mean, it was charred in the edges, but I still have it, the box and all of that stuff from when we early created
Planet Manon. That's awesome. That is, you need to leverage that. Throw some pictures of that stuff up. Game history. That's
the the special edition. Of course, the pre-sale is a one of a kind edition. There will be a Kickstarter edition of the game that will have an appendix in it in the back. That'll be a lot of information about the backstory, a lot of concept art leading up to it, a lot of old stuff, and a lot of like previews of upcoming stuff.
Awesome. So the last actual question we have for you is, where can people find your stuff? We're going to have a link up, but I want you to tell them where they can find you.
Of course. So they can, of course, they can go to the website, successorgames.com, S-U-C-C-O-R, sucks, no, S-U-C-C-E-S-S-O-R, games.com. Oh, I can't even spell successor. That's
can't even spell your own company name.
There's a story behind that. We'll tell it maybe on another time about where the name of the company comes from.
All right.
As a precursor to Planet Bound as well. And so successorgames.com and everything social media is RU Planet Bound, except for Twitter, which is the letter R, the letter U, and Planet Bound.
Awesome. Well, Jer, thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate you sitting down with us. I'm excited to get my book. Got Eric to order his book, so sucked him in.
Click the button today.
As we typically do to one another. So for everybody out there, don't forget, you can check us out in a bunch of different places. You can check out Coastal Con on Facebook. You can check out the Indie Invasion Facebook page. You can also check out, you can find our podcast on Podbean, Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, Pocket Cast, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, all kinds of different places. And yep, there you go. Count them out. And I am determined every time to say every single one of them. You can also check us out. Indie Invasion does have a Patreon page. You can go over and check that out. We have some exclusive content. Matter of fact, we just posted some exclusive content last night on there. If you'd like to become a Patreon backer, we have some cool stuff coming out. You can also check out Unipolar Games. They do our merchandising stuff. So they've got t-shirts, dice trays, coffee cups, those kind of things for Indie Invasion. And until we see you guys next time, remember to prepare yourself for the invasion.